Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 396-0577 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John McKay, how are you?
Working on the farmer's tan, baseball this week in the 100-degree heat.
Absolutely. Earlier, it was a little crazy there. We kind of got our first taste of summer, and it felt like it came a little bit earlier. So it was definitely a hot one earlier in the week.
Who left the oven on?
Yeah, somebody did for sure. In the studio with us, we have our resident in-house lending specialist, Mr. Tom Coyne with Umpqua. Tom, how are you?
You know, I'm good, but instead of the farmer's tan, I actually pulled out some tank tops. And so I got a little burnt shoulders here.
You're going for it.
Yeah, but I wanted to tan up the upper arms a little
bit. Got the muscle shirts going now. Yep. Okay, fantastic.
They call them bro tanks, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. It's that time of year, man, too. The river, you start to see the boats out and the whole nother dimension of why people love living in Tri-Cities.
Yeah, so it is hot. I hope it stays cooled off a little bit.
Absolutely. So there's definitely only a small portion that really like the 100-degree heat days. So I do like those mornings and evenings, though. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely very, very nice. And one of the things we always talk about is just, yeah, how much sunshine we have here in Tri-Cities, why a lot of people like to retire here, and it just the outdoor activities, you can tell, are really picking up. Well, we always like to start off with our crazy national real estate house story, and this one right out of Zillow this week, we have the Full House house. Is on the market.
So San Francisco, right?
Yes, absolutely. The San Francisco house. Now, the famous red door is gone, but it has a different paint job. But this is the exterior house that they used for the shots for that show. And that house was actually, it's a Victorian-era home built in 1883. So, I mean, some crazy old homes that are out there, vintage, coming back on the market. And in the cities like this, you see that. Incredibly ornate banisters, a lot of woodwork in the house. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful home. It doesn't quite look like it looked like on the show from the interior set.
So the interior, thinking about it, would be on some set.
Set. And this was the house they used for all the exterior shots. And that is listed at $4.1 million. Classic San Francisco pricing there.
Lance, if I owned that house and you were listening, I would make sure you put on there, this was the Full House house.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, that is what they led with as the story. So I definitely think they are putting some, you know, there's reputation cost associated with some properties. And we always talk about location and history, but histories of homes comes into play and can really add to, or in some cases, we've talked about subtract from the value.
Haunted houses
that we talk about in our Halloween special. So that is our national real estate story. On a local front, we always like to kind of tailor that with a local story. And one of the things to note is we're getting a little bit of inventory relief. You know, the builders have been building a lot recently as we got into really, really low inventory. It was just a month and a half, 2 months ago, we were at scary numbers where we had dipped below 500. And so that created our very, very tight inventory market. It's still tight from an inventory versus sales perspective. But now, instead of being in those 500s, we finally peaked up and we're looking at active inventory for sale. We're floating right around that 635 to 650 mark, you know, going up and down a little bit right now. So for buyers out there, they're just like, absolutely, we couldn't find anything. We gave up. We left the market. Nice to see a little bit of relief. And we've got roughly, 150, 155 additional homes on the market that we didn't have a month and a half, 2 months ago. So nice to have some choices. And boy, did we ever need that inventory. So we talked about that a lot. And so it's coming back to a position where we might get back to a little more normalized market. At least we're trending in that direction with summer inventory right now. So we'll keep you posted. We check out those numbers and see what's going on, and always looking at what's going on in the market and then how we can bring that to the show for you guys. One thing Tom and I were talking about is just what's been happening the last month in real estate. What are some of the objections and questions that you're seeing in this market? And so one of the things I always like to look at is I go back through as we prepare for the radio show, and I have a list of questions that we're getting that make good show topics, because that's what the consumers are talking about. And one of the biggest ones, one of the first ones that I came up with that we're seeing a lot more often right now, and this happens in a tight market, is the consumers are asking, what does it involve to sell the house myself? You know, I'm just going to, the market's great. I've heard that nobody can find houses. So chances are, if I throw my sign up out in front of that thing, I'm going to get that thing sold. So why don't I go for sale by owner? And what's involved in that? And what are some of the risks? This is like the number one question that I'm getting from consumers over the last couple of weeks as we're talking to people about their house values and kind of looking into that. So the number one thing that I always start with when I'm answering that question for folks is, obviously your goal is to save some money there, because you want to save the, you know, you want to save the 3 to 6% rough numbers, you know, commissions that you're looking at depending upon your structure. You're wanting to save that number. The number one thing I look at is, are you really saving some money? So I go back and I kind of look at those stats and see what they are. And so one of the stats that is released, and our association, our trade association, tracks this number very closely, is that last year the average for sale by owner home sold for $210,000 versus the average MLS listed not home was $249,000. Hmm. So big difference. So there's a couple things you can look into that. Could that be price range, where maybe upper end homes were listed causing that average to go up? Some of that is with price range. The other portion of that is sometimes people just aren't sure where to price their house, and they could be missing out on some money there, especially in a market where, like we've had, one of the things I'm telling people is, if you get two or three offers, when you do put your sign up, let's say that happens. Let's say that you get two or three offers. Do you know from a seller's perspective how to handle those offers to actually maximize your return? Are you going to have that experience to say, what is a couple strategies I can use to maximize the return? And so that's number one. That's one of the things we look at, is from our perspective, that experience in negotiating those multiple offers for the benefit. Second thing that we look at a lot, and this is just one of the things that I see happen a lot, and the second thing that we look at a lot is, if you're in a for sale by owner transaction, and I went through the data, because basically everybody knows over the last 15 years, we've had a huge technology revolution. We've seen everything from taxis to going to Uber, to the way that we receive our internet service, to our smartphone apps that we use. We've seen those change dramatically. And people a lot of times are frustrated. Why hasn't the real estate industry changed with the technology that quickly? And one of the things that's happened is, actually, if you go back and look at the data, in 2001, 69% of transactions were done with real estate agents. And you look at the data now, last year, and that number is now at 87%. So even through the technology change, actually more transactions are now getting done with agents. And a lot of that is the ability, I think, to connect to those agents faster, to get to them, to get the advice, the more models that people are putting into play. And a lot of it is that the advertising on the internet. So the big thing that we end up asking people in that situation is, are you properly pricing the house? And are people that are coming after for sale by owners actually looking to take advantage of somebody? And a lot of times that's the case. We see a lot. The first questions I ask people that have been listed by themselves for two or three, you know, for 1 to 2 months, I go, how many times have people approached you saying they want you to carry the contract? Mm-hmm. They want you to provide the financing. And the question is always like, oh, gosh, I've had two or three of those calls. Absolutely, because when they can't get traditional financing or there's an issue that pops up, then they're going to their next alternative is maybe somebody that doesn't know better, that doesn't know about the protections to move into place for that. Not always the case, but a lot of the time I see this trend coming up. So one of the things that we're doing as agents when we're helping sellers in that situation is making sure you're priced at the highest possible dollar that you can get and still get that house sold to maximize the return on your investment, and then helping protect people from the consumers that are out there looking. And I know that sounds very strange, but one of the things that happens is when someone calls, a lot of times people don't know the right questions to ask. So we're very, very safety conscious in our industry. And one of the things that's different is if someone just calls you off Craigslist and they're like, hey, I see you've got a house for sale. Can I come over and check it out? And a lot of times a for sale by owner is likely to say, well, yeah, sure you can, obviously. So then you're letting who knows who into your home. Strange situation, right? Well, a lot, we're trained to ask the questions of, which lender are you working with in town? How long have you been looking for a home? What is your pre-approval amount up to? And so with those questions, we're able to get that information to say, is this a real person? You know, are they really here to purchase my home, or are they casing the place to come back later tonight and not purchase a bunch of goods that they're going to take out of my house?
You know, Lance, I didn't even think about that whole safety perspective. But I remember it was like, I think a year ago, and it wasn't here locally, but a real estate agent was killed.
Yeah.
During a showing.
I think that was in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. There was two last year. And so that's the thing. And so we've changed up how we do a lot of stuff and put a lot of safety protocols in place. And actually, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up, because that leads me to my next biggest question that we get. And that's a lot of times because information is out there, right? We know that you can go on Zillow, you can go on Trulia, you can go on these sites, you can get instant information about home. With that, what happens is a lot of times people want instant showings. So they'll call our agents up and they'll say, hey, I want to go see that house that is $630,000 on the river, and I want to see it at 1 o'clock. Okay, that's fantastic. And so for the seller, you know, as a service and a duty to our seller, my seller that's selling that $630,000 house has said to me, Lance, I would really like you to bring qualified people in to the house. So please make sure you're bringing qualified buyers over. So our first question will be, fantastic. Are you working with Tom at Umpqua? Well, no, I'm not. Okay, great. Second question. If you're not working with Tom at Umpqua, who are you working with? Who have you gotten pre-approved? Well, I haven't gotten pre-approved here. Okay. Well, do you think you can, do you have cash then? Are you purchasing the $630,000 house? No, not. I don't have that cash. Okay, great. Well, we need to have a talk with someone like Tom. So we're working through those questions, but that is the biggest objection, is people asking, why can't I go see that house without a pre-approval letter? I just want to go see it. And so that's when we really get into that discussion of what the seller has instructed us as their needs. They only want pre-qualified people to come through.
Well, think about if you're the seller and you have to clean the house, you got to get the dogs, you got to go take the kids out to dinner, you got to get out of the house, you make all these special arrangements for someone to come see it. And if they're not serious enough to go get a pre-approval letter, then why go through all that work?
Yeah, and I've had and people that don't know what they're doing in this situation, I've heard all kinds of things from other agents. You know, and you expect other agents to have that courtesy to do that, but they don't all know how to do that. I've heard all kinds of people. I've called people for feedback. What did they think of the house? And someone will say, oh, well, it was way out of their price range, but they were actually just, you know, they want to see what they could, you know, they've always just really liked the exterior and they want to see what they could afford in 7 years. I mean, literally, I've had these type of feedback from people. I know
crazy.
You guys are laughing, but
that is crazy.
But those are the types of things with agents that necessarily don't know what they're doing that we get sometimes. And so that is a huge objection. And sometimes I will tell you, people take offense to it. Mm-hmm. And we just have to look at those situations. And we're not trying to offend anybody. You very perfectly well could afford that house. And so people will get really upset with us. They'll be like, I'm never doing business with you. I have the money and you should just trust me. Mm-hmm. Well, if that was the case, I wouldn't be very good at what I do. And my seller would just absolutely be screaming mad at me that I had, you know, lined up a person that could afford $250 to see the house when we're selling $650, or vice versa, $150, $250, the same mm-hmm. price range is different. So those are the first two biggest objections we've had on the phones and with our clients in the last 2 weeks. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tom at Umpqua, see what his customers are saying, what questions they're asking in this hot Tri-Cities market right here
on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been talking about trends, questions that we're seeing here local in the Tri-Cities real estate market. Before the break, we talked a little bit about some inventory coming back to the market. As most people know, it's been a little sparse in certain price ranges, so it's nice to see a few more numbers creeping back up there. And so we're going to check in with Tom. We talked about some for sale by owners issues that crop up, about why people need pre-approvals for just for showings of houses, and what in our industry, in our world, has kind of brought that into play the last couple of years. And so I'm excited to turn it over to Tom and hear a little bit about what's going on the lending side of things with him day to day.
You know, Lance, I think this is a great topic to have, because just this last week we were dealing with an objection from not even a client, but it was a donor of a gift to a client. And one of the things that we come across on an FHA loan, when let's say a parent gives a gift to their son, is we have to source that gift from the donor's account. So there are certain requirements that each loan program has. And sometimes we'll get an objection on one of the items we need. And they say, you know, I shouldn't have to give you that because it's not even me getting the loan. It's, you know, my son is getting the loan, or my daughter's getting the loan, or my nephew, whoever. And unfortunately, FHA is really black and white with these rules. And when we don't get this guideline met, we can't close the loan. And so quite often we'll get these objections, and most of the time we're going to work through it. But when your lender comes to you and gives you a guideline for something, say that they need from you, know that 99% of the time, it's not because they're curious of what's going on, or they just want to bother you or make you do extra work. It's because they legitimately need this to fund your loan. And Lance, I explain it like this a lot of times when I get an objection from a client is, thankfully for you and me, lending has gotten tougher. Because 10 years ago, we're probably not having these issues, or I may not need this requirement. But then we all know what happened in 2008.
Yes.
My 401k is still trying to recover from that.
Yes, absolutely. And I know what you mean, because I've seen these situations to where, like, you know, I've seen like an uncle says, you know what, for your guys' wedding present, what I want to do is I want to give you, instead of, you know, gifts at the wedding and stuff, I want to give you $3,000 towards your down payment of your new house. And so you probably give them a list that say, we need the check for the $3,000, and we need a copy of your uncle's bank statement showing the account that it came out of. And then all of a sudden, you know, your uncle is like super mass, you know, privatized or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what are you talking about? They need to see my bank statement. I know the objections you're talking mm-hmm. about, because now he's having to provide a bank statement. He's not even the one getting loan. He just wanted to give somebody his niece or nephew or cousin's money.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there are rules like this out there, and there's not really anything we can do about it.
Right, because they just want to make sure somebody else didn't give the uncle that money, and then he gave it to the ICE.
Because gifts have to be from a family member, not from a buddy.
So major, major documentation.
Yep, absolutely. So when you go into a loan, go into it knowing that the bank's going to ask me for stuff, some of the things I may not like or agree with, but you just got to do it. Because at the end of the day, you're getting 200 $300,000-$400,000 from some entity that doesn't know you from your next door neighbor, and they're going to do all their due diligence to make sure they're meeting all the laws and regulations out there and make sure you're well qualified for this loan. So that's one of the things. It has to do with bank statements. You know, another one that we came across, and this was a few months ago, where we needed to get all pages of a bank statement. And I have clients ask me all the time, well, why do you need page 3 of 4? Because the balance is right out there on the front page. And we tried and tried and tried to get this. And all of a sudden, it gets to the point where I don't think we're going to close on time because we've been trying to get this bank statement for so long. And finally, we get the real estate agents involved. Lance, I think this was with your team. And you guys call the clients and you say, hey, no, really, he does need all pages of that bank statement. We get that bank statement. And sure enough, there's a big, massive deposit on there. And that deposit was from a credit card that was transferred over to the bank account.
Yes.
So down payment can't come from an unsecured source. So that was an acceptable source of funds. So we had to do a lot of backtracking and find a new way to structure a loan. And we were able to make it work. But had we have just gotten that bank statement up front, we would have found out that that was going to be a problem and been able to work on solving that problem sooner. So those are the type of things that lenders are looking for when they say all pages of the bank statement is, was there anything else on the rest of this pages that we need to know about? Another one, how come you need my tax returns if you're going to order the tax transcripts anyways? One of the things Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac does, and I think it's really to curb against fraud, is to make sure that the client's not committing fraud. And if you give us tax returns and tell us, here's my tax returns, and then we pull your transcripts and see that what you filed was completely different than what you just provided us, well, then you've committed fraud.
I mean, I know I'm laughing about this, but these are the type of
things
that
happen.
And
then so Umpqua has a stance that if we've uncovered any sort of fraud that a client has done, we won't lend to them at all. Whether it's a little thing or a big thing. And so these are the types of things that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, they're asking lenders to do. And it's just a way to, again, protect myself, protect Lance, protect John, and everyone out there listening to the radio show, because these are the sorts of things that got the economy in trouble, you know, 10 years ago and really hurt the economy a lot. Another thing, how come I can't buy a duplex or a fourplex and call it my owner-occupied house, and I have a real nice house up here in Crested Hills right now? Well, when again, back 10 years ago, when all these houses were getting foreclosed, a lot of them were investment properties. And if you're having financial trouble and you have rental income coming in and you have to decide, do I make the house payment on my primary residence or this rental? What are you going to do? You're going to make the payment on your primary residence. And so these houses, the investment properties that people had, all these foreclosures happened in the last 10 years, they're considered more risk than an owner-occupied property. And an underwriter is not going to believe that you're moving from your Crested Hills home into a duplex down in Central Richland because it would be a massive downsize. Now, if you sold your Crested Hills home and purchased that one and it just made sense, then, you know, maybe, but it's going to be a case-by-case basis. So investment properties require more down, and overall, they're just considered more risky. So if you're going to buy an investment property and it's going to be a true investment property, that's what we're going to have to call it. Another one we hear quite a bit. Now, we haven't run into this too much lately because rates have been really, really stable. But client locks in a rate and they say, yes, Tom, I like that rate. I want you to lock it in and go ahead and start my loan. And then rates get better. When a bank locks an interest rate, they're hedging that rate. And there's a cost to doing that. And if every bank got in the habit of locking in a rate, paying for the hedging costs, and then if rates get better, they float the rate down, they're going to have massive, massive losses because it's just not a good business practice. And if a bank takes a loss, or they're giving money away or losing it money here, what do they have to do? They have to raise the rates to absorb these operating costs. And so to keep costs low, to stay competitive in the market, keep low interest rates, low closing costs, they just won't float down an interest rate. Now, there are certain cases where if the market takes a massive turn and the lender says, geez, rates are now 0.75% less than what you locked in at. And if we don't lose the hedging costs that we experience on the initial lock and float this down, the client's going to walk to another lender. In that case, they'll occasionally look to renegotiate the rate with the client. But 99% of the time, it's not allowed. Once you lock in the rate, it's a two-way relationship. You're saying, I'm happy with this rate. If rates go up or down, and the bank says the same thing. Because if rates go up, you're dancing.
Yeah, you can guarantee if rates go up, you're not going to walk into the bank and say, hey, you know what? I feel bad. I saw rates go up. I'll take the higher rate. I just give me the higher rate. Yeah, it, like that conversation isn't going to happen,
no,
right?
No, I've never had that one.
So it should. So it shouldn't happen on the other side of things.
Right, right. So last one I want to talk about is, why do I have to have mortgage insurance? Now, mortgage insurance is required on just about every loan out there when a client doesn't have 20% down, and it's because the risk of default to the lender is greater on loans with smaller down payments. Now, the mortgage insurance helps spread the risk between the borrower and the lender of the borrower defaulting on the loan. Now, this, we talked about this before, I think, on a previous show, but mortgage insurance originally came about in the 1950s when many states had legal ceilings on their interest rates. Now, if lenders at, up to that point were paying for the mortgage insurance and they were wrapping into the rate. So with lenders paying that mortgage insurance and building into the rate, they were bumping up against those interest rate ceilings. And so by passing that cost along to the buyer, they protected themselves in keeping the rate further below the interest rate ceilings. So that's when it initially came along, and that's what mortgage insurance is. It's a way to spread the risk of default between the home buyer and the lender.
Tom, those are really, really good questions. Yeah, you had more over there than I thought you had. So yes.
It looks like a small list, but there's quite a few
there. You're fielding those all day long. Well, I've got one more big one that I wanted to go over, and then we'll hit a little bit of inventory as we wrap up the show. But one of the biggest ones that I've got recently, and I know we've done entire shows on this, but it's not so much an objection as it is a comment. And one of the biggest ones I've been getting is, as we've talked about on the show, a lot of times we're in multiple offers. We'll have three or four offers on a property. We will potentially let those people know, hey, there's been some other offers on the property, and I am going to present your offer as legally required. I'm going to get together with the seller. I'm going to get your offer presented. I'm going to present all three of these offers. And then I will let you know what the seller has decided, because then it becomes the seller's choice in those moments. And sometimes in recently we've had, there are agents and buyers that know to be extremely, extremely aggressive. So they're doing things at the very first offer that is put in, where they're going maybe above the list price. They're going with less closing costs. And I'll tell you what has happened recently is we've gone back and we've said to people, hey, I presented the offers. There were three offers. I apologize that the seller has gone and decided to accept another offer, and so you didn't get the house. And people go ballistic on me, like freak out level, DEFCON level 10. Like, they're like, I thought you were going to give us a deadline to bring our highest and best. I thought we would have a chance to counter. And they are not happy campers, right? Mm-hmm. Because they get the house. And that is partly a misconception out there that the seller is going to give a deadline. That's one strategy that sellers use, but not required. So one of the things that happens that I'm hearing from people out there is, you know what? The seller was actually offended by your offer, and they didn't want to work with you. So they just chose the offer that had better terms up front. And so that's really hard to hear, because when people get used to multiple offers or deadlines, but just because they've seen two or three other people do that, doesn't mean that is always the strategy the seller's going to use. And so just note that there are multiple options that can happen. And so, you know, discuss that with your agent that you're working with. How should we structure this? Do we think there will be multiples? The worst that I've seen recently is deadlines that people gave and then accepting an offer before the deadline. All offers will be looked at and reviewed on Friday, and it's Monday. And then on Tuesday night, that somebody gets a call that says, actually, I'm sorry, the property sold. And they're like, what? I thought all offers were going to be, you know, reviewed on Friday. Well, they reviewed one before and it was just too good to pass up. And so there's strange, strange things that can happen. And so navigating that process. So that was one of the biggest things hearing, is that people were offended by the offer and not responding at all.
And everybody's different. You might have a seller that says, hey, you know what? This is my asking price and this guy is willing to pay it. And I'm just going to take this. I'm not interested in going back and forth with anybody. And
yeah.
I mean, so everybody's different. You got to take that into account when you're writing your offer.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as agents, you know, especially obligated in the seller's best interest and what the seller's wishes are, there's a lot to deal with. So looking over those options, if you have any questions about that, you can always go to kenmoreteam.com, send us a message. Speaking of inventory, we've got some great new inventory. We've got a new listing out on Cottonwood Creek in the past weeks. There's been another one out there that I've talked about. Brand new listing, another one in Cottonwood Creek. This is a four-bedroom, three-bath out in Badger Canyon, 3,678 square feet. You've got the open floor plan, big great room, corner gas fireplace, slider out to a large deck, big master suite on the main level, dual sink vanities, amazing walk-in closet, separate shower. Absolutely fantastic daylight basement that has another family room that goes out onto a covered patio. New carpets, fabulous, fabulous property, and that's coming in at $439,000. Central Richland out there, we've got 1108 Potter Avenue in Richland. This is a three-bedroom, one-bath Rambler in Central Richland, 880 square feet, brand-new carpeting, bright living room, completely updated kitchen with tile floors, absolutely great, great layout with a fully fenced yard. And that's coming in at $132,000, so very sought-after price point right now. And then pick number three I have is 9011 West John Day Avenue in Kennewick. This is a three-bedroom, three-bath home in West Kennewick. It's in a cul-de-sac, 2112 square feet. It's got Brazilian hardwood floors on the main level, great, great layout, big kitchen, ample counter space. Absolutely comfortable family room with a gas fireplace. Once again, master suite on the upper level with private master bathroom, newer HVAC, and you've got a concrete pad with a double gate for future RV parking. That's coming in at $269,900. So great, great inventory and some great price ranges out there. If you have any questions about real estate, much like the questions that we went over today, had some great calls this week from radio show listeners, some great closings, two or three homes sold last week from our radio listeners. I can't thank you enough for those referrals and for choosing to work with us. If you have any of those questions, feel free to give me a call or go to kenmoreteam.com and send us a message. Tom, on the pre-approval letters or any lending questions, how can people find you?
Go to my website, tomcoinhomeloans.com, or at the office, 783-7300.
And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.